It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
Peace be with you.
Hey, what's going on this side?
Oh, allow me to introduce Nurse Diesel, my right-hand man, woman.
Dr. Thorndyke, how do you do? Charlotte Diesel. I have left a complete medical file of everyone in the Institute here in your room. I'm sure you'll want to rest a bit and freshen up before you meet the rest of the staff. Dinner is served promptly at 8 in the private dining room. Those who are tardy do not get fruit cup.
Fruit cup.
Not the fruit cup, fruit cup. Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. We're going to be playing a real game later on today, the memory game. How's your memory? I don't want to piss Charlie off, but you'll actually have a chance to win $100 if you make it through all 7 levels. I think this next guy has a pretty good memory. At least he's a pretty good poker player. We're going to talk to him right now. Jamie Gold, winner of the 2006 World Series of Poker. Jamie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Now, I know you do a lot of interviews, and you talk to people that are totally into poker, that know a lot about poker. Mm-hmm. I know a very little about poker, but, I have tried, and I've played.
You play it all?
I played online a little bit, and, I play with fake money. I don't play the real stuff. I don't get involved. And I am terrified to go into an Atlantic City or a Las Vegas poker room. That just kind of freaks me out a little bit, because I just picture walking into a table where the two guys from Rounders are, and then I'd just be screwed inside of 15 minutes.
Now, what about playing just with your friends at home?
I've done that, and I do reasonably well on that one, too. And, I have this one friend who I'm sitting across from right now who likes to play different weird games.
Variations.
And try to shake it up instead of playing straight.
Don't let's change the subject. How does it usually end when you play poker with your friends?
I lose badly.
And then?
Yes, and then I throw the chips.
Usually you say, gentlemen, we're done here.
I leave in anger. In fact, most of, I'd say 4 out of 5 times I've played with my buddies here on the show, I usually end up leaving in anger. That's just the way it works. But that's neither here nor there, Jamie. Let's talk about you.
All right.
You won the World Series of Poker in 2006. There was a lot of talk. I've been reading a lot about you and the strategies. And when you're playing in a tournament like the World Series of Poker, you were the chip leader, 4 out of 5 days, something like that?
We actually played for 8 days, so it was 6 of the 8 days.
6 of the 8 days, and even though I don't know a lot about the game, I know that having the big stack is very, very significant. Is that the most important element when you're playing in a tournament like the World Series, to have the big stack for the majority of the tournament?
Well, that had never happened before, so
okay.
it's a very rare thing. People are chip leaders for one day, maybe 2 days. I think that happened once, but nobody had ever been for 3, much less 6. So it's really important. It's just almost impossible to do, and I just got very lucky. And
how long do you play each day? It's an 8-day tournament, but how long do you play in a day?
15 hours a day.
Oh. Wow.
So fatigue does play a pretty big part in that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One mental mistake and you're usually done. That's it.
So you win the World Series. You're obviously playing a lot of poker, and you've got a website. Is it buzznation.com? Is that what it is?
My website is jamiegold.com.
I went to that one. Buzz Nation's your company.
Buzz Nation is the production company that I work with.
Ah, and you do a lot of charity poker tournaments as well, right?
I do. I've done over 30 in the last 2 years, but I've decided to focus on just 3 with one main one. I've become the celebrity spokesperson for the MDA ALS division because my dad had Lou Gehrig's disease.
And, right.
So I've agreed to work for them pretty much for the rest of my life.
Oh, good. Wow.
And the Michael J. Fox organization I'm going to be working for, as well as the Montel Williams Foundation, because they're both people who I love and respect and have become friendly with, and I really believe in the cause. So if there's any way that anybody wants to help, I would say go to either the MDAALS.org or the Michael J. Fox Foundation or the Montel Williams Foundation. Those are the 3 that I found that all the money actually goes where it's supposed to go, which is really important when you're giving money to a charity.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a way, and they're rated, actually. A lot of charities, mm-hmm. we do a lot of work on this show as well, and you have to know, who to work for and who to put the time in for, because you never know when you're going to get the money going towards administration costs, and all of a sudden, at the end of the day, there's nothing left for the actual cause itself.
That's absolutely. But, I'll tell you what's great, just for you know, any person who is not necessarily involved in poker or a celebrity, they can actually sit down and play with the artists and the celebrities, musicians, all the people that they love, because it's such a social and casual atmosphere that you can spend a little bit of money, but you can always win money in these charity tournaments, but you're helping to make the world a better place, right. And you're kind of bridging the gap between celebrities and the public, and it's just, you know, it's the greatest thing that you can do if you love the game of poker, you know, go to a charity poker event.
Most of your stuff happened in Vegas, is that where primarily you're? No,
all over the country.
Okay.
I've done them in, you know, almost every state and all over the world.
I didn't know that.
They happen everywhere. You know, the one that I'm planning will actually be in Tampa. You know, the first one in my dad's name will be in Tampa at the Super Bowl.
Now, when you do this and you sit down at a charity event, is it normally like, you know, like kind of the same thing you would do on a casino night where you're not playing for real money, or can you sit down and do it for real moolah? Because I know that appeals to a lot of people that play the game.
It depends what state you're in, but in general, these are for real money. I mean, the one that we're doing tomorrow, Ante Up for Africa, I believe first prize is somewhere around $200,000 to $300,000.
Oh wow!
There's real money in it. What they usually do is take half the prize pool and give it to the charity, and half the prize pool gets split up between the winners.
Right. Now, when you won the World Series in 2006, you had played, you know, since you learned the game very young, but you were new to the whole racket of the regular professional poker players. You were kind of the new kid on the block, right?
I was. I had been playing. I took it very, very seriously for about 3 years before I tried playing the big one. That was the first time I played in a major event, and I, you know, got pretty lucky. So
if you don't mind, what I'd like to do, because I legitimately am curious how to do this, because I'd love to go down to Atlantic City on a weekend and not, you know, sit there and go to silly slot machines or play blackjack and get my ass kicked. I'd like to sit down. I enjoy playing for a long period of time if you can hang in there, and I want to know some things about the game. There are two things that frighten me. One is you hear about these MIT math geniuses that are phenomenal at figuring out percentages, and when you watch poker on television, obviously you see the percentage of winning. There's a lot of math involved. Can a math moron like myself be successful playing poker?
You can, but there's some basic math that you have to understand, but you don't have to do it in a math way.
Okay.
You can do it in a logical way. Let's say you have two diamonds in your hand, and there's two diamonds on the board.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to know that there are only 9 potential diamonds left out of 42 cards that could help your hand, and then you have to figure out, does that mean I'm a 3-to-1 dog? Or what? All that matters is that you should know that when you have a flush draw like that, is it worth it? Are there enough chips in the pot, and are you going to get paid off with enough chips to put your chips in there?
This is so cool.
How we can explain the game to you.
This is so cool right now. I'm having fun. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Because there are ways that you can know that you don't have to know what the percentage is if you know, if you have two kings in your hand, you don't have to know what the percentage is that you're an 80% favorite over any other given hand except an ace high hand. And if an ace high hand, they have, you know, 3 outs that they can hit over 5 cards. You don't have to work out all those numbers. What you need to know is there's only one real hand in the deck, the two aces, that's better than your hand before you start playing. Mm-hmm. So you might as well just put all your chips in there
with the flush,
see the two kings.
With the two kings. But
without seeing a flop, meaning get it all in before you even start playing.
But a flush draw is a totally different story. See, and I would think, you know, I get two diamonds and I see two diamonds come out on the flop. I'm like, I'm getting all excited. I would process it. Not that there were, I don't even remember the numbers that he said of how many diamonds are left in the deck. Mm-hmm. I would think, hey, man, this is, you know, I've got an overwhelming chance of getting the flush on this hand.
Well,
and so,
not, actually not. Actually
see,
not.
You don't,
you
though.
Have,
see, I didn't
you
know
have
that.
Is, you're a 3-to-1 dog. But if you have two over cards to the board, let's say you have ace and king of diamonds, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, 7-8-2 on the board, and there's two diamonds. You have to figure, as long as nobody has a pair of aces and nobody has a pair of kings, you don't really worry about somebody having 3-7s, 3-8s, 3-8s, or 3-2s, because that's just so rare. You can't worry about that in a hand. If that happens and you lose, you lose. You can still beat them with your flush. But if you have two over cards to the board and your flush draw, you're favored over any pair. So if somebody has the pair of jacks, you still have a better hand than them because you could hit the ace, you could hit the king, or you could hit the diamond. So when you have to factor those things in too, but you don't have to know the percentages. You just have to know, wow, I have two big cards that are bigger than the board, which I could make a pair out of, and I also have the diamonds. So my hand is really good. Or let's say you have a pair and your two diamonds. Anytime you have a pair plus a draw, meaning your flush draw or your straight draw,
right,
move it all in because you're almost a favorite over any hand unless they happen to have two pair or three of a kind, which is, again, very rare, and you can still win with your flush. Your flush will still beat any hand that could be out on the board with those three cards.
So I've actually learned, even in your explanation so far, that having your pair suited is a very significant deal. I mean, that's why they always talk about suited.
If you have a pair and you're suited, right, you have 9, 10 of diamonds, and there's a 10 with two diamonds on the board,
right,
you just push all your chips in, and you hope for the best. You're probably a favorite anyway. You could hit the 9 and have two pair. You could hit the 10 and have three 10s. You could hit the diamond. There are so many ways, and you might not have to hit anything to win the hand.
Oh, wow. This is so much fun. And now you get to the part where the intangibles come into play. Obviously, the ability to read others, which
that's
is
a big one.
Overwhelmingly,
I believe I could play without looking at my cards in most games. Like,
wow,
if I came to your home game, I would never have to look at my cards, and I should easily be a big winner.
That's the part that fascinates me. You know, you hear about the tell. You know how you know what's a guy's tell? What's he do? And you say you could sit down and do that immediately. You could sit at a table and know whether people were had good hands.
I could do it if you didn't know I was there. Let's say on a two-way mirror, I could do it immediately. But once the human nature is, you know that I'm there, now everyone's trying to trick me. So once people are trying to, you know, do different things and give you false tells, and they're not going to move and they're not going to breathe, and you never know what that means until you study them for an hour. But if you don't know that I'm there, you know, like in Rounders, when he went into that judges game, they didn't know that he was watching them.
Right.
So they were all relaxed. And yes, you could easily do that. It's not as hard as it looks to do
when you've been
playing the game that long.
What makes experienced poker players so good at reading other people? Is there, I mean, obviously, there's a formula for it.
The human condition is so common, is that most people do the same thing in the same situations. I mean, most people have that fight or flight kind of response. Most people have a fear response. Most people, if they're, you know, if you're not facing, if you're looking away, if you're breathing, if you see somebody's, you know, jugular vein, if that's beating really fast, in general, they're nervous.
So
if someone's nervous, they don't have a good hand.
Wow. So there are standard tells that everybody has.
Amazing how universal they are.
But do some people also get excited and nervous if they have a very good hand? Does that ever get confusing?
Yeah, but that's real obvious too. When someone sits up in their chair all of a sudden, they're not paying attention, they're having a bad night, they're in a bad mood, and all of a sudden you could see it in their face, they can't hide it. Or
right,
they're just looking away like they don't even want to be playing this game. It's so obvious that they have a huge hand.
Because they're trying too hard.
And then don't forget, they just did something as if they had nothing. And then all of a sudden they're throwing in all these chips. Well, if you had nothing, you wouldn't want to show that you had nothing when you were throwing in all those chips. The only reason you showed you had nothing is because you have a huge hand.
Oh, God, I love this. It also comes down to cards, though. I mean, in 06, were you also getting decent hands?
Absolutely, absolutely, but not the way that they showed it on TV. On TV, you know, we played, so 15 hours a day, let's say, for eight, nine days. So let's say, you know, I played, 1,300 hours. So in 1,300 hours, and you saw maybe an hour of it on television.
Which I did, and when I was watching you, I'll be honest with you, if it was 60 minutes, I would say the producers and the editors were trying to make you look like Mr. Cocky. Because they, you know, the stuff that I saw with you, you know, you knew this. I mean, I'm not telling you anything stranger. They were trying to, at least the way they were showing you, because your strategy was to do a lot of talking, and they came out, to, you know, you would say, hey, this guy, man, this is Mr. Cocky Hump.
Well, they
here.
Wanted, they had to make me a character, one. If you watch me at a poker table, people get very upset because I'm playing, you know, when I'm playing very seriously, I'm not talking at all. So maybe out of 5 hours, I'll talk maybe 5 minutes.
Really?
But that 5 minutes gets on television because it's the only thing that makes it interesting. Would you want to watch a bunch of guys who never said a word?
Well, there are people that say, you know, the explosion of poker on TV is incredible because you're watching a bunch of guys play cards. But no, you're really not when you're watching a professional
player. You're watching
players.
Drama. It's a reality show.
Who's that South American guy that has the little shark?
Humberto Brennan.
He's
hilarious.
How do you get along with that guy?
I love him. I can see why he annoys He really annoys people, but that's part of his game. He wants to get you focused on the shark. He's not doing it just to create a character. You know, yes, it's good for the game and it's good for potential sponsors and what have you, but
right.
It also, if you focus on that, I don't worry about it because I'm worried about the poker. But other people start getting focused and they start getting bent. The minute you're bent, you can't focus on your own game.
Is there anybody now that you hate to see at your table? And will you tell me if there is?
I don't mind. No.
Okay.
The only reason I hate to see them is because they're so good.
They're so good. Right, mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there are guys like Danny Negreanu and Phil Ivey and Phil Hellmuth.
The superstars,
I actually love
right.
playing with Phil Hellmuth. And I like playing with Daniel, too. There are guys like that you don't want to see at your table because you want to control the table. If they're not at my table, I'm usually in complete control of everything without saying anything. I don't say a word. But, you know, you realize that you have a little more experience. I'm lucky enough that once I won, I got to play with the best players in the world. I get to go on all these television shows, and I can afford to put down $1 million to play. If you've never played with the best in the world, you have no idea what they're doing. You think you do, and everybody's real confident about what a great poker player they are. I was. Until I realized how little I knew. And now that I've been exposed to it, I'm at such a higher level, still nowhere near the greatest in the world, but I'm on my way. And when I'm sitting at a table and other people who haven't had that experience, they just have no idea what they don't know.
Do the poker games, those, I would imagine, because I've never been out in Vegas and been by one of these TV tournaments or a World Series, do these poker tournaments have groupies as well? Do they have like the baseball nannies of poker that hang out, you know, hey, big
yeah.
boy, how are you? You know,
it's tough to go through any major public place. If I go through an airport, if I go through a casino, if I go to a mall, if I go to a restaurant, you know, but it's a really flattering thing. I mean, all they want is a picture and an autograph. And how long does that take? And they want to shake your hand. So, you know, you bring a lot
and
of
and they want to take you back to their hotel room and they want to bang you and get all of your money.
You mean female groupies.
Yes. Female groupies, yes.
Oh, you know, it's not a lot of that. There is
really?
A little of it. But you know, you're always thinking like something, they must be a little bit bent. You know, if they're coming after me,
exactly.
obviously because they think I'm famous or rich or what have you.
Well, the thing about it is, I think the game in the game itself has grown in such popularity over the last few years. And if I was sitting down and watching a World Series of Poker, you're talking about all these tells. Can you study the game watching it on television? And get
that's the absolute worst way
really
that you can learn the game. I
really?
Love people who say I've watched you on TV, and so they think they know how to play against me.
Right.
What you saw again, you're not seeing what led up to that. If I'm playing with you for 5 hours,
yeah, 5 hours,
say,
and
we
you talk
never
5 minutes,
hand,
right?
But I'm watching everything you do, and then all of a sudden I make a move and I push all in with deuce five. On television, they're going to say, "What an idiot!" But what they didn't notice is I haven't played for 5 hours. I haven't been getting any great cards. I'm getting desperate. I'm making sure that you know I must have a huge hand. Why would I wait 5 hours for this one hand? It wasn't the worst move in the world. But on television, they say, "Oh my God!" What? Or you look like a genius when all of a sudden you get two aces and you know the television doesn't give any of the outside factors, which is almost the whole game.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I love that. This is so fascinating because I've learned two things. I've learned the strategy of the tell, maybe three things, and I've also learned the fact that I'm never going to sit down at a table again.
You're further now than
never
you were before.
Too scary. I know we got to let you go in a second here, Jamie, and we appreciate it. I got a million questions. I want to race through these. I love the strategy of telling the truth. You did that when you won the World Series. Some of the times you would just be you'd say, "Hey, I've got a monster hand here," and you would say that to the table, and that kind of took people off their game, didn't it?
Well, think about it. You know, as a newbie, I was a new guy to this. I had to figure out something that no one had ever done before that
right.
might confuse people, and that was the only thing I could think of is that nobody ever talked. And nobody ever used psychology, which is totally legal, and you can do it up until a point. Now, because of me, they've changed some of the rules, and
right.
things are getting different, and that's okay, but I had to do what I had to do to figure out a way to beat the best in the world, which I was not.
Now, the guy that won recently won $2 million, right? That
No. The last one, I won 12.
You won 12. That was a record, right?
8.5.
8.5. So,
and this year will be about 7.
Okay. I was Beth Ann gave me a headline, a clipping that somebody actually had won $2 million. There must be another tournament.
No, these are the tournaments that lead up to.
What do you do right after you win $12 million? What the hell do you do?
Well, I did about 200 interviews.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
And I hadn't slept, and at 7 a.m., I do remember, I don't remember most of them, but I remember going into CNN and doing headline news, not having slept. And, of course, now my friends show that to me, and I look back at it and go, wow. I was actually a little bit lit, you know.
Yeah. Of course.
What?
You it's know, celebration
I had,
time.
I had a few drinks. It was still 7 a.m., but I had made a commitment, and I couldn't pass it up. And, you know, I look at it. You couldn't tell if you didn't know me, but I look at it and go, wow, you know, I can't believe I was doing that.
Right.
And then I slept for a whole day, and then I had about 10 of my closest friends, and we rented out, they call the Palazzo Suites here. And
oh, yeah.
I probably spent $50,000 in about 2 days, but we had a blast.
Good. Yeah, I bet you did. Answer. I love that answer. And my last question for you, Jamie, what should I do the first time I walk into a legitimate casino poker room? What's the most important thing to remember when I go into that experience?
You should call me, and I'll gladly give you some coaching. But,
well, that's it. I'll walk in with you. That'll be perfect.
People who can't call me, let's say, you know, for the people who are your listeners,
right.
I would say that the best thing you can do is find a friend of yours that's a poker player, and they will coach you through the process, and you'll be amazed at how much you can learn from anybody who just knows the basic game, or even walk in, put your name on the board, go up to someone and say, how do I get into a game? And, you know, anybody who works there will get you into a game. When you get into the game, see if there's anybody there that might be friendly enough, not that wants to take your money, but somebody who might be friendly enough to just explain the basics of the game to you that might not care. What you want to do is look for someone who's really wealthy, who's not a professional poker player.
Okay.
And this way, they don't care about your money, meaning they're really wealthy, but they're sitting down in a small game.
Right.
They're just doing it for fun. They probably know all the rules and all the basics,
yeah.
Plus that you should absolutely read any book you can get your hands on. Some books are great and some books are terrible, but every book has something that you can take from it. And I suggest reading any book you can possibly get your hands on and every book you can get your hands on, and that's what will teach you the best. And then, of course, you have to put it to use. You have to go and play.
Right. And what is the next major professional event we'll see you in?
July 4th, the World Series of Poker.
World Series of Poker, of course, is coming up. See, and I didn't know that. That's how much of a moron I am.
That's
when it comes
okay.
to poker.
You
I
better
didn't
get
know
your
that.
Application in, Mike.
Yeah, but you do have absolute bald-ass rookies that show up and decide to dive into that, right? And that's not necessarily the best idea.
I was one of them.
You played a little bit before you did that.
No, you're right. I wasn't an absolute rookie. Most people were not going to throw down their $10,000 unless they really know what they're doing.
Right,
you know what I mean? A little bit. Basic.
If somebody goes to jamiegold.com, they'll be able to get all your charity information, all the good work you're doing.
They
right
will
now.
Eventually. Right now, it's a pretty weak site. You know, there's
okay.
not much going on there. I just have a contact so that anybody who wants information has a way to contact me. But I am working on it so that you know, eventually it will have all of the information. I am going to be at I'll be at the it's called the PPA, the Professional Poker Players Association, where there's 1.2 million players, and I'm going to be at their booth at 4 o'clock on the 5th, signing autographs, and you know, for anything anybody wants, I'll be at the Rio, signing autographs at the PPA booth from 4 to 5 o'clock on the 5th.
You're a good guy. It's been really nice talking to you.
It's great to talk to you. Well, I'll definitely call you again.
Love to have you on the show again. And you know, my God, we're going to be rooting for you now in the World Series. And
well, let's talk after the series, and we'll see how I do.
You're a good man, Jamie Gold. Thanks for coming on the show, and good luck to you in the World Series of Poker.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk
good
to you
luck,
soon.
Jamie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm never playing poker again.
Well, don't play with him.
I'm terrified.
Intimidated, are you?
Well, intimidated, exhilarated. Mm-hmm. I just talking to him got me a little pumped up about the guy's tells. When he's talking about the juggler, you know, the juggler vein.
Right.
I always hate that. That's like saying nuclear. Sorry about that. But
I took from that I should wear a turtleneck.
You would be. Now I'm beginning to realize, though, why you are a little better at poker than the rest of
the
us.
The intellect?
It's not the intellect, but you do have the math mind a little bit.
That's what
you
got
to think in that
and
way.
And you do. I mean, you probably would get a flush draw with two diamonds, and then on the flop there'd be two other diamonds.
Right.
And you might process it like, how many diamonds are left in the deck? I would get two diamonds, get a flop of two diamonds, and go, I'm gonna win. I totally would not even process the fact that there were that limited amount of diamonds in the rest of the
deck.
What's
really cool about what he said, and I seldom am able to think this way. I guess I could if I thought like him. I'd probably be a better card player.
Mm-hmm.
He plays three hands at once on the same five cards.
Right.
He's seeing what can happen, what might happen, what should happen, and what won't happen.
Right. And most of those
most
guys.
People are just
do that.
Yeah, but that's not the way we play.
No, we play like more.
Of course we do.
I don't think I could ever. I guess if you really dove in, like he said, read the books. And
right.
But I wouldn't have the balls even to walk into the casino and say, oh, excuse me, sir.
Because
you know what I do?
Are you rich?
I would walk up to the guy that I thought was friendly and rich and didn't care, and he'd be the professional poker player.
Yeah, he'd walk out with your keys.
He'd be just like, what's his name in Rounders? Matt Damon.
Exactly.
I'd be sitting next to him.
It's wise caution.
Well, I can go busting you up all night long. Splash the putt. And the one thing in Rounders, there's one scene in there as far as who's he playing with? He's playing with somebody, and he just looks at the guy, and he says, "And I know you don't have it." And you know, they can do this by all the different tells. You watch it on TV. I can't see it. I see a bunch of guys, like some of them wearing sunglasses. I can't tell in one five-minute period what they're doing. But that's cool. So I'm going to root for this guy and see what's going on in the World Series. Should be a lot of fun. And Buzz?
Yes.
Any more desire to play after listening to him?
No.
That's it. Okay. Hey, guess what, though? We're going to play another game here. We're going to play a legitimate game, give everybody a chance to win $100. How's your memory? How's your memory?
Your memory game.
You might remember we did this last week and we kind of developed it, right? We kind of honed it and refined it. We're going to really tweak it up now. And we have 7 lines that you have to say in order.
Okay? But Joe called them a stanza.
A stanza. I might have called it a stanza too because I can't play poker. You get through all 7 of these. You have to repeat one after the other and then repeat the whole segment. You could win $100 if you have an incredible memory.
Nothing to it.
But here's the thing. We've made up the stories, and the stories are going to be very entertaining
as well. The stanzas?
Yes, they're filled with sex and violence and all those good things.
So, intrigue?
How's your memory? You want to play the game? 877-365-3636. I want to go play poker right now.
Right now? Let's play the memory game instead.
Yeah, we'll play memory instead. We'll be right back after this message.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show.